On September 27th of our annual fall Northwoods fishing trip, we had a front row seat on a celestial event. We were still on the lake when it started to happen. I looked to the east and saw this thin sliver of pink just over the treetops. And the more we watched it, the higher and the higher it rose, and the brighter and brighter it grew. It turned from pink to amber. The wind was non-existent. There wasn't a cloud in the sky. And the reflection of that moon made like a white carpet of light that was shimmering on the surface. What we were watching was the unfolding of four, count them, four lunar events. It was the harvest moon, the full moon closest to the September 21st equinox. It was the super moon. Not that we sit there, wow, that's super, but it's the Earth's, the moon's closest orbit to the Earth, which makes it seem bigger than usual. It was part of what's called a tetrad, which means that between April of 2014 and September 27th, there were four lunar eclipses. But the main attraction started about 10:30. That reflection on the lake grew dimmer and dimmer as this shadow of an ellipse started slowly moving across the moon. It turned from white to this eerie amber, and then into this wonderful orange and red mixture. It was a total eclipse. A total eclipse of a blood moon, which is very rare. If you want to see the next ones, mark your calendars now, October 8th, 2033. That eclipse was also a significant event because as I sat there on a chair out in that cool, crisp autumn air watching this incredible sight, I thought of Jesus' words from Matthew 21. There will be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars and on earth, distress among the nations. People will faint from fear of what is coming upon the world because the powers of heaven and earth will be shaken. At this undisclosed time, the world as we know it will go out of business. Everything we considered important will be rendered totally insignificant. Our brand of domesticated, housebroken religion, which turns God's commands into suggestions and turns worship into theater, will turn to vapor. Every knee on earth will tremble and bow. Every tongue will stutter. And everywhere you go, you will hear the chattering of teeth. Jesus said, be on guard so that you are not weighed down with drunkenness and worry, and that day does not catch you like a trap. This passage, along with others of Jesus in the Gospels and in the book of Revelation, in the book of Daniel, are what we call apocalyptic texts. Apocalyptic meaning a disclosure of the end that is coming. If you watch TV anytime at all, have you noticed the theme of all of these video games that are coming out, all centered in battle and warfare in this futuristic world where everything lies in ruins. Those are apocalyptic games. So the season of kneeling in Bethlehem does not begin on a festive note. In Advent, we wait for Jesus to signal the alarm. And those who are at ease with the current arrangements are going to be in for a rude awakening. Because the present age will end, and something's going to take its place. A new order will rise out of the ashes of the old. And we light Advent candles to show that, as I said earlier, the church lives by a different calendar. We have a different sense of time. We do not operate by the fiscal year or by the Roman calendar of January, February, and March. Christians live with another timetable. Our new year starts on November 29th. And during the days of Advent, as you know, the days will go shorter, the nights will grow longer. And as those days of December roll on, we know that come the 21st, it will be the longest, darkest night of all. This reminds us during December that it will get darker before it gets light. Maybe you have heard of Pastor John Hagee. He pastors a 20,000-member congregation in Dallas, Texas. And he has written a lot of books on the subject of the return of Christ and all of the global wars and disasters that will accompany it. He sold millions of copies of these books. And recently he produced a documentary that is telling the world that those four consecutive lunar eclipses, the tetrad, which ends with the blood moon, is the beginning of the end. The timing of the major Jewish festivals, combined with the woeful headlines of events in this world, all coincide, he says, with the blood moon. Pope Francis' visit to the United States came right after the blood moon. And Pastor Hagee says it is a certain sign that the curtains are about to close. For the heavens are God's billboard, he says. God has been sending signals to the earth, and no one has been picking up on them. No one, of course, except him. And as I read what he writes, I must tell you, I am not convinced, primarily on biblical grounds. But you can be sure I'm going to listen. If I turn on the Christian Broadcasting Channel and John Hagee says, "There's no point in buying my books. The time is too short. Don't send money to my television ministry. The time has come," then I'm going to listen. And Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, this generation shall not pass until all these things have taken place." But on the other side, Jesus also said, "Of that day and of that hour, no one knows, not even the heavens, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father." Pastor Hagee and many who share this perspective do so with a sense of urgency, and that is what we should have. Our lives should be lived with a sense of urgency, but he says we do so because the clock is ticking, and it's about 2 minutes until midnight. They say these things because they claim to have inside information, which Jesus himself said he never had. You know, newspapers publish horoscopes for those who believe that their destiny is governed by the movement of the stars. You want to look and see if it says when the moon is in the seventh house, you will meet a mysterious stranger and you will come upon financial opportunities. While some look for guidance in the stars, there are others who witness eclipses and meteor showers and blood moons, and they marvel at the wonder of nature and its rhythms, but do not see them as any sign from God. Some people will look at such things in the sky and the events on earth and simply go about their business. And some people, like us, choose to skip the scripture altogether because, well, we'll let the churches that are out on the fringe pay attention to those. We avoid the apocalyptic because it, well, quite frankly, it terrifies us. And we don't understand it. And I have to tell you that I don't really understand it either. I cannot boil it down to a 20-minute sermon. No one can, because we're dealing with something mysterious, something cosmic. Fred Craddock, who is the preacher's preacher, said, and listen to this, the human heart is too small of a screen on which to cast the scheme of these apocalyptic texts. You have that picture? The little screen in our hearts, and we're trying to show a colossal picture that it just doesn't fit. These texts are hard for our 21st century brains to grasp. We don't understand them. We don't like what we don't understand, but I think we don't like texts like this for another reason, and that has to do with where we find ourselves. Because how you hear these words will depend upon where you are. If you are living in a 15,000 square foot estate, you're going to hear these words differently than if you're living in a cardboard box under a bridge somewhere. People who have nothing in this world, people who are little and unheard and unnoticed and dismissed, hear Jesus' forecast of a time to come as music to their ears. You see, people who are unheard of and unloved and have nothing of the world's richness have no investment in the current arrangements which has contributed to them being the way they are. They have no qualms about the slate being wiped clean and having a clean start. They perk up when they hear about Jesus descending upon the clouds and dismantling the status quo and replacing it with a whole new order. They try to imagine how it will be when God's grace makes them equals. And they understand that there is a place prepared for them at that long, long table, at the messianic banquet at the end of time. You know, when all we can say is, Jesus was a wonderful person and a great moral example. If all we can say is, Jesus is our friend who gets us out of the fixes we get ourselves into, when the most appealing case for Christianity we can make is that believing God will do you some good, then what we have done is taken this grand view of God's future and reduced it to nothing. We're saying that God is not strong enough or powerful enough to fix the ails of the world. And when the darkness comes, you see, all that we'll have left is a moral example. All we'll have left is an errand-running, problem-fixing God. All we will have left are our prescription drugs. And that's not enough to get you by the darkness. Jesus said, don't get weighed down in drunkenness and worry, and believe that the world has more to offer you than God. Drunkenness does not mean actual drunkenness. It means being intoxicated with the present order and the way things are done in our churches, in our city, in our nation, and in our world. There is more yet to come because your redemption is near. Now, the sermon title you have is wrong. And I didn't realize that until last night. Excuse me. Because these words from Jesus were not given to terrorize us. See, they're given to us to comfort us. The word is watch, not watch out. It's not, it's not to terrorize, it's to comfort. So don't put the pillows over your head and have a gun under the mattress. Don't put iron bars on your window and doors. Don't hide in a hole. Don't build yourself a bunker and then hunker down. Barbara Taylor tells of a time in colonial New England when a meeting of the state legislators was plunged into sudden darkness from an eclipse. Many of the legislators panicked. Others moved to adjourn the session because they were sure it was the beginning of the end of the world. But one legislator said, "Mr. Speaker, if this is not the end of the world and we adjourn, we will be fools. If it is the end of the world, I should choose to be found doing my duty. I move you, Mr. Speaker, that candles be brought out." Now, isn't that a wonderful image? That as we watch, not watch out, but as we watch, we want to be found doing our duty with candlelight if necessary. But that candle and this candle points to that light that will never, ever be extinguished. Oh, you can listen to these words of Jesus and you can turn them into a mathematical equation, and you can study the stars and the total eclipses and the lunar moons, and you can join all of those who try to forecast something that Jesus said he didn't even know. That is one way to watch. The other way is to, as the individual in this legislature said, let's just light some candles and be about our business to do our duty. But there's a third way to watch. And that is to understand that our world can come to an end at any time. There will probably be another ISIS attack, bigger, more destructive. Someone will receive a withering diagnosis. Someone will lose a child. And for them, the world will come to an end. They will look to the skies and see distress in the sun, in the moon, in the stars. But at Advent, we say to those people for whom their world has come to an end, and we say to everyone who has thrown up their arms and just given up and hunkered down, we say light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. The only light we have to follow, you see, is the light of Christ. And so as you go about your lives and your day-by-day activities during this 2015 edition of Advent, remember not to watch out, not to be ready for God's hammer to fall upon you. Not watch out, but watch in anticipation. Watch, for God's promises are never, never in vain.